What you're hearing is the first recording ever made of the Skull and Bones initiation ceremony. It has never been broadcast before.
Hey, all you basket cases, and you have to be a basket case to be listening to someone like me. You hear me speak on here a lot about social justice warriors, these overly college-educated, hipsterish, elitist, progressive liberal 20 and early 30-year-old kids, basically, who worship at the altar of globalism without even knowing it, and who willfully brand everyone who disagrees with them with the scarlet letters of racism, misogyny, homophobe, Islamophobe, etc., etc., into all those words lose all their power and meaning. Well, I could not take it anymore, and as someone of German heritage, indeed, I had to step back and examine what a Nazi really is, what the word means in every context. I just could not take the excessive branding of conservatives and indeed just plain simple trolls on the internet with this very broad term of Nazi any longer. And so today marks the beginning of a new series of features on different characters in the rogues gallery of Nazism, and indeed events in World War I and II, and of how their ideas found a home in German heads to begin with. Because I'm tired of people misusing a term directly from my German heritage. And cunts, that means that I will tell you, I will inform and educate you on who is a Nazi, not the other way around. Do you understand? That's okay, because you will. Biographers, documentarians, historians, and alternative researchers have all tried to pinpoint the beginning of the story at large. Some begin with the birth of Hitler, others begin with his adolescence. Some begin with his enlistment in the service. Some go directly to the beginning or end of World War I, and others the beginning or end of World War II and work backwards, whatever. But I think for this iteration of the story, I think we're going to drop in on Adolf Hitler and his cronies in what has come to be known as the Beer Hall Putsch in Munich. The name of the beer hall was Burger Brau Keller. The date is November 8th, 1923. At this moment in history, beer halls were a popular place for men to gather after work and exchange ideas, jokes. They would eat and, you know, grow large on sausages and drink beer, and they would have political debate and just, you know, take the edge off. Truly, this night began as any other with them doing just that, until what did their eyes appear? But 603 SA officers, that is literally translating to Storm Detachment, the SA paramilitary wing of the Nazi Party, surrounding the beer hall and bringing in a machine gun in to the middle of the beer hall interior. Hitler led the way and said he wouldn't let anyone leave, and he pronounced, by God, either the German Revolution begins tonight or no man in here shall live to see the morning. This was the first of many tirades against the Jewish concerns. Joining Hitler in this assault, this operation, was Rudolf Hess, who would go on to become his deputy Führer. And during this attempted coup, they would take hostage both the Bavarian prime minister and the state police chief, both of whom refused to comply with their visions of the future. The following morning, shots were fired by the 130 men under the command of the senior lieutenant Baron, and this dramatic occupation was disbanded and brought to a close. Hitler was arrested and given an expedited 24-day trial, with which he was given the podium to speak and appeal his beliefs. He conveniently left out all of the anti-Semitism, which had peppered the monologues spoken in the beer hall the night of the occupation. He was sentenced to 5 years, but truly he was released early for good behavior and only saw 9 months of solid imprisonment, in which he was allowed visitation rights, as was his future deputy Führer, Rudolf Hess. And as the story goes, Hitler spent these 9 months writing Mein Kampf, or My Struggle, which would further propagate in the minds of ambitious Germans who were disenfranchised from the Treaty of Versailles that ended World War I, feeling that the Germans were dealt an unfair hand. Just as Nazi ideas can begin and propagate in beer halls, the same could be said that it could be suggested that Antifa ideas of this exaggerated white privilege can begin in coffee houses. I look back at old war footage of the Nazis and how dark around the eyes they are. They look as if their innocence has been ripped from their souls, from their bodies. And indeed, that's the truth. That is what happened. But I see these dark eyes that were clouded by both Hitler and Heinrich Himmler's fascination with the occult and the massive doses of amphetamines that were employed to pep up these soldiers as they performed their rounds and patrols. You look at what just recently happened in Hamburg, Germany, with the Black Bloc, and with the debris on set aflame in the streets, and we see that it is not the conservatives and the nerdy trolls in their basements making Pepe memes around the clock that are stirring this kind of violent sentiment towards other human beings, but it is in fact the well-meaning liberals who have ingested a terrible poison with the utmost of good intention to liberate the marginalized. that's noble. But where they let their desires, where they direct their desires, is unhealthy, dangerous, and corrupt. We must be wary of organizations such as Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and By Any Means Necessary, or BAMN, that profess to be anti-fascism while resorting to the very same tactics of said fascists. They must be stamped out if they attempt to provoke the likes of us. Those who just want our nation to remain sovereign and of its own identity. Because diversity enforced by globalism only results in homogeny, where everyone is alike, whether they're different or not. And I don't think that anyone wants to live in that kind of utopia. All right, that's enough heavy-handed preaching for now, but I want to prepare you that this is a topic that I will be visiting from many different angles in the coming months, because it's a topic that has become that has captivated my attention recently, not only as an impassioned response to those who would call all conservatives Nazis and to criticize their resentment of current progressive liberal groupthink, but also because, as I said, it is my heritage, and this is about national heritage, this is about generational memory, and this is about a personal odyssey to recognize the different parts that make up my psyche. So I'll be revisiting this topic often from many different angles. There are so many different moving parts to the machine of World War II, and I feel like I can bring something new to the table on a very weathered topic. But now we're going to have some fun. I'm going to talk to Ben Garrison, artist of Gur Graphics, and his many-pronged battle, his epic battle with 4chan and 8chan, white neo-Nazi hackers from their basement bunkers who tried and failed to ruin his life and career. And we'll get to that right now. Ladies and gentlemen, legendary artist with Gur Graphics, that's three R's. He has come into some controversy, not entirely his own, and in fact, mostly not his own. And I'm talking about Ben Garrison. And you, would you consider yourself a member of the alt-right? Ben, what is the alt-right?
Well, the alt-right is a phrase that was originally coined by Richard Spencer. And Richard Spencer lives about a half hour north of me in Whitefish, or at least he did. I think he lives in Washington, D.C. now. But, of course, you know Richard Spencer from the controversy with his mother, who was forced to sell a building due to some perceived hatred by Richard's part, and they picked on his mother for that, some real estate people up there, and that stirred up a lot of controversy. But no, I talked to Richard over the phone once, and he's proud of the guy. He's proud of himself for coining the phrase alt-right, which is picked up by the mainstream media. I'm not part of the alt-right. I consider myself a libertarian cartoonist. If somebody wants to call me alt-right, that's their prerogative. But that's, to me, it's part of this this way of the mainstream media to pigeonhole anybody who's vaguely conservative into the alt-right, because I think it sort of sounds pejorative. You know, alt-right sort of sounds like Third Reich to them. So alt-right is, they're trying to put everybody in that same basket and then equate them with Nazis, you see, and that's, or white supremacists, and that's the way they are able to vilify us in one general basket. Well, so I'm a libertarian cartoonist. That's how I started out. That's how I remain right now.
Right. Now, well, first off, how's this for an icebreaker? Greg Gianforte just became a member of the House of Representatives in Montana, not a day after attacking a member of what was it, The Guardian, for shoving a microphone in his face and trying to troll him and everything. I mean,
that probably helped him get elected.
It got him elected, I believe. And the funny thing is that, I've heard it was a choke slam. I've heard it was a body slam. And meanwhile, you've got a guy down here in Tennessee who's a pro wrestler who's running, and he refrains from choke slamming reporters. So this is the kind of world we live in now. I don't know. But I think that was done
to provoke him. He was a provocateur rather than a journalist. But it backfired on him, didn't it?
I think that he kind of initiated the response. Gianforte is a man's man and will respond in kind when provoked, and they got more than they bargained for, I think. Now, the thing about that is that I could see myself voting for him after that happened, and the reason is because I want to believe in someone who is always just a hair's breadth away from snapping when it's necessary, someone who can respond when there is a call to action. And I'm not talking about just on the lower life forms known as Guardian reporters, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, the Guardian assigned a columnist to attack me too, and they called me a cartoonist who might have worked for Joseph Goebbels because I had the audacity to draw a pro-Brexit cartoon in which I showed the deleterious effects of endless Muslim immigration. Oh, no, you can't do that. That means that you're this terrible racist and bigot, blah, blah, blah. So they sent their attack dogs out of me once. But with the reporter attacking the Montana, our lone representative, that's sort of indicative of what's going on with men in general. It's like the globalist or cultural Marxists want to portray real men as somehow possessing toxic masculinity, and you're not supposed to exhibit any kind of masculinity or stand up for yourself. You're supposed to submit, and they don't like that. Well, that's one of the reasons I think he got elected, because he just had enough of this nonsense. Get out of my face, boom.
Yeah,
of course. The reporter was mostly acting when he did that because he wanted to say, "Oh, look at the mean bully."
I've said recently that toxic masculinity is just regular masculinity rebranded, and they want us to be totally feminized, which is why they're trying to redefine the borders of gender now. Which I have a huge problem with that. I don't know if you do, but.
Well, I think it's another part of this means by the cultural Marxists to help undermine the family and break down the relations of the sexes, male and female. They want to make women into men and men into women. Now, if somebody wants to be a trans whatever, I mean, that's their business if they want to be that. But I don't want to be forced to have to applaud that. And I don't want to be forced to have to pay a fine if I call them by the wrong pronoun. And that's what's being set up.
Canada. It's already happening in Canada.
Or a he or him or whatever, and you're using the wrong pronoun, they might say, well, that's hate speech. You pay a fine. That's what they want to do in Europe. And they're already succeeding in Europe, where you can't criticize the Muslim immigrants without risking a heavy fine or even prison time out there. Well, America, we still have some semblance of free speech, and we have to protect it at all means. You know, I've already talked about this to some great length about how free speech, well, all of our freedom is under attack, but they're really going after free speech now. And they've already succeeded in the workplace, where pretty much everybody is rendered fearful and quiescent in the workplace, because if they say the wrong thing, they could be fired, because that's what they always go after, is your means of making a living. And that's certainly experienced that in spades.
Yeah, what you're talking about is already happening in Canada, or being proposed to happen, where you can be fined for using the wrong pronoun. But when you make branch off and make 20 different pronouns, and now there's his and hers and it's and something with a Z in it, it's insanity.
And it's excessive is what it is. It's a symptom of late Rome when they were in their most debaucherous cycle, I think, when they were...
Well, you're exactly right there, because I've read, you know, one of the late Roman emperors, and I think it was in the Eastern Empire, was, you know, there was this man trying to be a woman and being emperor, and it's just that, you know, none of this is new under the sun. I mean, this has all been done before in history many times. It's the decadent kind of stage of a civilization. And, you know, let's face it, if you go to places like San Francisco, I mean, that's a modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you see, like, open sexual acts out on the street, and they're expecting everybody to applaud that. Well, I'm not going to applaud it, and I don't want to have to go to jail for not applauding it, you know? I don't want to have to be punished because I'm not calling Bruce Jenner a lady, you know? Bruce Jenner, you know, if he wants to put on makeup and pretend he's a woman, he can, but every cell in his body still says male, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm not going to be saying, yeah, you're a hero, you're brave. That's not bravery, and it's not being a hero.
Yeah.
You know, the people who stormed the beaches in Normandy, those guys were heroes, and those guys were brave. I mean, now we're supposed to, you know, call these, you know, trans whatever people brave. I don't see it. I just don't. You know, I see it as kind of what I think is sort of a mental illness.
Yeah, we're more and more we're subverting. They are subverting the natural order by saying that all these people who did incredibly brave things, truly brave things, they fought battles, they built civilization. They're the villains, and the people who did these very passively, perhaps vaguely respectable things, they're the real heroes. Like, if they stood up for themselves personally, they're more heroic than someone who, like you said, stormed the beaches of Normandy or was a pilot in World War II or something. Those are the real heroes, and for us to lose that benchmark of what true masculinity is kind of unnerving, because future generations will know a different narrative.
Well, they're teaching that in school to a great extent, where, you know, they're not teaching that the founding fathers were heroes. I mean, look what they've done to Andrew Jackson. I mean, he's vilified left and right in the textbooks because of the Trail of Tears. But, you know, back in those days, those were hard scrabble times, and a lot of those Indian tribes were on the side of the British in the War of 1812. But also, Andrew Jackson's main accomplishment was bringing down the banks, bringing down the central banks and the Rothschild Bank in the 1830s. It took him two terms to do it, but to me, that was one of the greatest accomplishments by any American president ever. So, but they don't concentrate on that. They want to concentrate on the Trail of Tears, and which was not entirely his fault. But bear in mind, too, back in those days, those are pretty hard scrabble times. I mean, Andrew Jackson fought in dozens of duels. This guy, they called him Old Hickory, but he was tough as nails. And the Rothschilds tried to kill him with one of their agents, and fortunately his pistol misfired. But, you know, to me, that guy's a hero, and he was a populist president who was similar to Trump in that he got in there and the elite hated him. And, you know, but the common man, yeah, he's going to go in there and clean house and the corruption, and that's exactly what he did. And that's why I kind of see a little bit of parallel with Trump. I'm hoping Trump can do the same thing. Only this time around, the corruption is far worse.
Let's talk about your how did you first come to prominence with Gurr Graphics, which is, I guess, it's your company, right?
Yeah, that was started in 2010. I started drawing the cartoons in 2009. Almost immediately, I started getting attacked by trolls, mostly kind of like Nazi trolls who didn't like the fact that I wasn't, because I did anti-Federal Reserve cartoons, and they are angry that I didn't what they call name the Jew, because I was going after people's deeds. I don't attack people's race or religion, but they wanted me to be a Wyatt man and start adding in all these offensive Jewish characters, and since I didn't, they started adding them in themselves, which, you know, naturally made me very angry. But I decided, when I started out, I just had this humble blog, and I was happy for my cartoons to be seen by 100 people or so. I thought that was, you know, if I could get 100 people or so to see my cartoons, hey, that's something. But then in 2010, I decided to, I wanted to separate the cartoons out from my business, because I had a commercial art business and I wanted to kind of like set up a firewall between the two. And so I set up GER Graphics so I could put my cartoons all on GER Graphics and then have my commercial site separate. Well, the firewall didn't really work after a while, because I was, you know, by 2014, I was the most trolled cartoonist in the world. And in 2014, if you typed in my name, all this Nazi stuff came up. Somebody pasted my face on a Nazi uniform. And, you know, back in those days, Google had a prompt field. So if you started typing in Ben Garrison, it would come up racist, bigot, Nazi, blah, blah, blah. And of course, that had a huge negative effect on my business. I mean, I could see when I started drawing the cartoons, my income just dropped off a cliff. And I went through some really hard times, but it's also, a lot of it was due to I really handled all of that stuff in the exact wrong manner. So a lot of it I brought up myself, trying to stop it, you know, and the more I tried to stop it, the worse it got. It's kind of like this thing with CNN. I was like kind of chuckling. I said, CNN, these people are supposed to be smart. They should know better. And they're making, like, they're just doing it exactly the exact wrong way. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's the kind of death knell for CNN, because they're going to get everything they deserve by trying to shut this young man up who was just doing nothing but exercising his free speech.
Yeah.
But what happened to me was a little bit different, because, you know, they were going after my cartoons and the trolls outnumbered me vastly. I was just one guy, and they were able to take any cartoon I drew and they would change it up into racism and anti-Semitism, and they'd spread the cartoon out much further on the internet than I ever could. So it's got to be a point where I almost started to consider not drawing them at all. I was like totally ruined. You know, I was even kicked out of the art gallery I was in because the trolls ganged up and started harassing the owner. And she was really angry. She really thought I was a Nazi. And I had to explain to her, no, it's just trolls. And she understood, but I knew I had to leave because she was like too upset by that. So here I was, around the time I wrote The Rogue Cartoonist, was like my last gasp, trying to prove to the world that I wasn't this racist Nazi, and the book flopped. You know, I sold, you know, a couple hundred copies of it, but it was like at that point I hit the low point, and, you know, it was really bad, and I figured something's got to change, and it was me who had to change, because I was handling the whole thing in the worst possible manner. And how I changed was this. I was actually at war with 4chan and 8chan. I was at war with the whole internet hate machine. And Frederick Brennan on 8chan was a young man with brittle bone disease. And I was trying to get him to stop with these constant threads that they're posting every day. And they're violating my copyright, because they were taking my cartoons and changing them into these awful things. So I wrote him a complaint, and you know, that just triggered him, and then I was going to get even. And in my book, that was before I had a resolution with Brennan. And in my book, you'll see in Rogue Cartoonist, I had a drawing of him. I said, I'll get even with him. This guy has brittle bone disease, so I'll show him in his wheelchair, and they call him Hot Wheels. So I'll show him in a burning wheelchair, and since his body's no good to him, I'm just going to show him as a floating head, floating in the sea of flames. And he had this little quirky smirk on his face. That's really going to make him mad. No, he loved it. He just loved that cartoon. And he wrote me, says, I want to put this on a coffee mug. And I said, well, okay, let's put it on a mug and we'll split the proceeds, you know. And so then I realized that this guy, he has so many things, you know, like the whole deck of cards was stacked against him in life, and yet he had something I didn't have. And here I am, this older, much older guy. He had a lot more poise than I did. He could take any kind of criticism, and I couldn't. I said, well, if he can take it, why can't I? So that's when I really changed my mindset on this, and that's when I decided to stop caring. You know, I realized that, you know what, nobody really cares about this anyway, that I'm being attacked. And actually, it brought me a lot of publicity, except I was, so what I needed to do was like a mental judo move, which I did, and kind of just flip the whole thing into my advantage. And after that, I sort of stopped caring and I started developing a little bit more poise. And now, if somebody calls me a racist, or even if somebody alters my cartoons, I really don't give, I don't care. It doesn't bother me anymore. Maybe because I got calloused or whatever. But in 2015, when we hit our low point and we had a hard time paying the rent, I, well, we got to do something. And so I had a meeting with my wife, Tina, and says, well, we got the election coming up. What we're going to do is we're going to draw more cartoons, meaning I'm going to draw more cartoons, but she's going to be handling the website and she's going to handle the social media. And we're going to spread the cartoons out better than the trolls could. And so in 2016, that was our big turnaround year. And that's exactly what we did. We turned it around and we started getting a lot of support. We went from like 2,000 Twitter followers to 80,000. And so now it's like, you know, the trolls are still out there, but it's like I defeated the internet hate machine, but not by fighting it directly. I just had to be myself and do my own thing and stop worrying about, you know, being called all these names. I mean, that's, I wish I could go back in time and go back to the me in 2010 and give me a good shaking. And then, listen, you're not going about this. You're going about this in a totally wrong manner, you know. But you know what? I made a lot of mistakes. And so I have to admit I was wrong and then do what's right. And that's what I've done.
Well, you know, and these trolls were very harsh toward you. They invented a nickname, Zyklon Ben, and yeah. This whole invented history of how, what were they suggesting? That you would make these anti-Semitic and anti-black illustrations, and then you would make a condensed, watered-down version to sell to anybody, right? Is that what they were suggesting?
Well, they created this doppelganger, yeah, because I wouldn't draw these cartoons on my own. They said, well, we'll just create, and that's one of their favorite things to tell people. So you're not who you think you are. You're what we say you are. So they created this doppelganger, and all the cartoons I drew were saying, well, this is the Jew-controlled libertarian Ben Garrison. This is the real cartoon. And they still do that. And they have this, the doppelganger, you know, who is this mass murdering, you know, most vile person in human history, wants to kill anybody, kill everybody. And, you know, it's pretty ridiculous. So there's all these stories of me being in prison and killing people, or me being in Vietnam and killing people. I'm just it was getting to the point of absurdity. But you know what? A lot of people believe that. They were shocked to find out that, you know, now they don't believe it. But back in 2014, 15, I would see messages or even get email. Oh, I really thought you were the Zyklon Ben character. I'm really shocked to find out that you're just a regular guy who's mad at the corruption. So, you know, and I had to endure a lot of hate mail, too, from people who really believed that I was, you know, some of them was from trolls, and I could tell what was from trolls, but some were from regular people who, you know, were just outraged that somebody like me existed. But the trolling at first started out from the Nazi, the far right, not people like Andrew Anglin, who I still despise. I think he's just a punk. He's a troll punk. But a lot of it also came from the far left. I had a help from a cyber investigator who tracked a lot of people down. One of them was a guy who lives in Hollywood, Florida. He went by he's this gay guy, and he's very far left, and he hates libertarians. So he's the one that was changing a lot of my cartoons. And the cyber investigator set up a honey trap to see who's taking the cartoons, because we set up a special link, and he could tell who downloaded the cartoons. And it turned out that when it got changed, he sourced it to this house in New Jersey, and it turns out to be the parents' house of this guy who he must have been visiting them up at the time. So, you know, we had a case, but lawyers won't go after such people because there's no, first of all, he didn't have a lot of money. And second of all, it's really difficult to prove from an IP address that this person actually did it. In other words, it costs a lot of money in subpoenas and court costs and there's no real payout for lawyers at the end, because most of the times they turn out to be these basement dwelling neat characters that means no education, employment, or training. And that's exactly what one turned out to be. Another guy in Florida, Joshua Goldberg, was one who's been was attacking me for many years, and the FBI finally caught him for giving out bomb instructions to what he thought was a Muslim terrorist, turned out to be an FBI agent. And that kid was only 20 years old, and he was one of them that was going by this handle of European88, who attacked me for years on Reddit. So, you know, there's really nothing you can do other than, if you're getting attacked on the internet by trolls, there's really nothing you can do about it except go on your own PR campaign and try to outshout them. And most people don't have the resources to do that, but I had the time, and, you know, I had the help of my wife, Tina, and we were able to finally overcome all of that. So it took a lot of time, a lot of work, and it was a lot of trial and error. I wasted a lot of time trying to take down all this stuff. In 2014 alone, I spent 100 man hours going to Imgur, requesting and sending my passport copy to Twitter to get rid of these fake accounts that were using my name and face to tweet out all kinds of racist nonsense, for example. I kept track of my hours, and I spent 100 hours doing just that in 2014 alone. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, I could use that time to draw cartoons or work on paintings, you know, to make some money. Instead, I'm just wasting my time. And so it was a lesson that was very hard for me to learn, but I learned it. That's for sure. I learned it the hard way.
Let's talk about, what are some good examples of some art that was altered to appear racist when it actually wasn't? I guess the March of Tyranny would be a good one, right? Describe that one, the differences.
That was the first one, and that one, that appeared on some Nazi site up in New England somewhere. I happened to see it one day, you know, because I was typing in March of Tyranny, because that was my first viral cartoon. I was really shocked because I was getting compliments from around the world, and it was translated into Spanish and all kinds of stuff. But I typed it in. I said, look at all these March. All of a sudden, one stood out because somebody had pasted this Jewish caricature, this offensive Jewish character head on there. And I traced it down to some Nazi site up in New England, and I politely asked the guy, this is a violation of my... this is my copyrighted work, and this is a violation of this, and you need to take this down. And he says, oh, I'll take it down, and he did. So he had some honor, at least. He took it down, but he says, oh, but it's on this server somewhere. And I tracked down the server, and it turned out, I'm not sure who put it there, but I think it's probably Andrew Anglin who started it. Because when I wrote another one of these Nazi sites, and that's when the Andrew Anglin stuff happened, and Andrew Anglin decided to declare a war on me because I'm against free speech. And I made a lot of mistakes in that regard because I said, well, this is hate speech, you know, and this is not mine. What you're doing is, it's not free speech, it's hate speech. But what I meant to say was, it's not free speech on Facebook, because somebody has started a Facebook page using my name and my face, you know, kill blacks, kill Jews, and all of my cartoons were on there. All of them were changed into this really god-awful offensive stuff, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I was on a big campaign to get that down, that page down, and Facebook was terrible. Facebook wouldn't take it down. It took 2 weeks and the help of a lawyer to get it taken down. And as soon as they took it down, finally they took it down, I was breathing a sigh of relief. And because you wouldn't believe all the hate mail I was getting from this. This page had thousands of likes, more than my Facebook page. But as soon as they took it down, it was up, and then they changed the name, and there it all was back again the next day. And, you know, that was one of the ordeals I had to go through. But Andrew Anglin he's a troll. He admits that's his passion life is trolling. He has this kind of a cartoonish Nazi site called the Daily Stormer, which is up, you know, it's gotten very popular because people love that kind of hatred. They love supporting hate. But he attacked me for years on that site, and I've tried to get even with him on my book. And if you saw the book, you'll see a couple cartoons featuring him as well.
I have, yeah.
But he's a guy who's just likes to stir up the pot and make money off of it. He's making money off this trolling. That's all it's about. I don't really believe, I don't even think he necessarily believes in any of the stuff that he spews. He makes money on what he enjoys in life, which is trolling. So I had it coming in at all angles, and I consider myself all past that. I mean, I'll still talk about the trolling, but to me, it's like, the war is over and I won. That's what I think.
Well, there's a more prescient, there's a more urgent war on the horizon, and it's what I guess you would call the culture war. Now, you've been pretty outspoken on InfoWars, talking to Alex Jones, and I think you've spoken with Mike Cernovich too, right?
I've had a talk with Stefan Molyneux once, and several other people like that. I've been on several radio shows and internet interviews. I'll talk to anybody. That's one thing I changed. I decided when we're turning things around, I turned down all these requests to go on shows and things because I'm not a public speaker. And I said, well, I'm just going to get up there and sound like a babbling idiot, so I'm not going to do it. And I said, well, now I'm going to do it. I'll talk to anybody now. So, I have, just to get to help spread the word that, hey, here's the real Ben Garrison. And guess what? He's not a Nazi kook. And that's helped a lot. I mean, I was even on the BBC once. So, but as far as the culture war, it's really what we have now is a civil war. It's just not really openly violent. It's a cultural civil war. And it's already cost me several friends. I lost my old liberal friends from Seattle because they think I'm a nut job just because I support Trump. Now, how crazy is that? I knew one person for like 35 years, and she unceremoniously unfriended me because she hated Trump and I was drawing pro-Trump cartoons. That's it. Boom.
Well, that's not that crazy because I have been jettisoned from an author community pretty much because I admitted to voting for Trump, and I felt like I was coming out of the closet to admit that to all these authors primarily based out of Portland, Oregon. You can imagine, how blue-pilled they are.
You have to pretty much keep your mouth shut about some things, and it's pointless to argue because it goes down to this. It's almost a kind of a weird dichotomy. You're either going to agree with a socialist, collectivist mindset, globalist mindset, or you're going to agree with the people who want freedom and liberty, individual rights, and you want the nation to have borders and sovereign rights. Nowadays, if you support America and you want, you want set borders, and you're called names. Now you're called a nationalist. Also, you're called a, what is the, there's another disparaging word for that I forgot, a nativist. But now it's like, okay, you're a nationalist. Oh, and you're white too. That means you're a white nationalist. You're a Nazi. Beat him in the head with a bike lock. So now you can't even be a patriot anymore. Look what Barack Obama says. Patriotism is dangerous. Where is this coming from? They don't want you to identify as being American and upholding the Constitution any longer. They want you to get on board with this climate change nonsense and globalist junk, and everybody's the same, and you've got to respect all cultures no matter what, even though it's been demonstrated throughout history that some cultures are superior to the others. But you can't say that because then you're a racist bigot and you should be hunted down. There got to be these witch hunts and burn you at the stake if you don't agree exactly with what the left is saying. And this is all goes down to this cultural Marxism. And so it's really two camps. You either believe in the left and the cultural Marxism, or of course they call it different names now. I mean, Bernie calls it progressivism. But if you ever listen to Bernie Sanders, he's talking about, he's using these communist catchphrases such as struggle, this struggle and our revolution. This guy is a communist, but they changed the labels and tweak it a little bit. They call Bernie a progressive candidate, and then suddenly that's okay. But meanwhile, you see examples over and over how these so-called leftist progressives, they want Michael Moore and Bernie and Hillary and all of them, they're profiting mightily off of all this. Michael Moore has all these tax dodges, and you got Bernie pocketing all this money. But he wants you to be coughing up endless tax dollars, and he wants you to be slave to their big government that they are in charge of. And it always works the same, doesn't it? So it's always the same kind of like siren song toward tyranny. Oh, yeah, free stuff. I want the free stuff. I'll make those rich bastards pay. And then I'm gonna enjoy the good life once those rich bastards cough it up. But it never happens, does it? Look what happened in Venezuela and Cuba. It's always the people who end up suffering and going into slavery and poverty. So, well, that's my mini rant, but that's how I feel about it. And it's setting up, you've got more of a stark division more and more in this country between the blue states and the red so-called flyover states, in which I'm living in one of them. And how people ask me, so, well, you know, it's right now it's a cold civil war, or it's a civil war of the culture, but how is that going to develop into a full-fledged civil war? Because the states are separate, you know. It's not unlikely for a band of Antifa in Seattle to be spending a lot of time and money driving over here to try to kill me, right? Mm-hmm. Well, how's it going to happen then? Well, it's going to happen when you get some numbskull collectivists in Washington, D.C. decided that, hey, we're going to revoke the Second Amendment. You're not going to have guns anymore, you know. Okay, well, you know, that's when a lot of people out here in Montana are going to, you know, they're going to be flipping a stiff mid-digit toward Washington, D.C. No, we're not going to give our guns up. Well, we're going to force you. We're going to send out the National Guard, and they're going to collect your guns. Well, if they do that, then the National Guard is also probably going to turn on the government, and that's when you got the Civil War. And I'm using a really strong example because it's unlikely Americans are ever going to give up their guns, but they keep pushing in other ways. They keep pushing socialists. They force us to buy, for example, third-party insurance. The government should never be in a position to be able to force us to buy anything we don't want, but that's what happened. And Americans don't push back. Well, I did. I didn't buy it. I said, the hell with it. I'm not buying Obamacare. I'm not buying the insurance. I'm not paying the fine.
Me neither. See what happens.
And that's what Americans are going to start doing. And that's what's going to trigger the Civil War eventually. You know, they're going to push something where, okay, now we got the 25th Amendment. And that means we declare Trump is crazy. We're going to impeach him. That could be a triggering point. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a triggering point eventually that'll start the conflagration. And I don't want that because it's better to return to the Republic and the Constitution rather than trigger a lot more bloodshed.
Right.
We don't need another 600,000 or more Americans dying like we did in the first Civil War.
Yes, and I also did not buy insurance, and oddly enough, I don't make enough to be penalized all these years later. So it's funny, all the loopholes out there, if you choose to make a decision and you make it informed, you know.
People, you know, like Bill Maher has always said, well, he's going to take away all the, you know, he's going to hurt all these Americans, take away their health care, and, oh, he's such a bad man. Well, you know, I think it should be taken care of. I think we should start over from scratch, and nobody has health care insurance, and just get the insurance companies that end up jacking up the price and take them all out and let capitalism take charge. Think about it. I mean, all the, you know, think about the low cost of TVs and computer equipment, et cetera, because capitalism is determining the price. If we had a capital, you know, like a Milton Friedman approach, or let true capitalism take over, you probably have much lower cost of healthcare. That's why a lot of Americans go to India to get like an open heart surgery, because it's like, you know, a tenth of the price that it is here. Well, if they have capitalism in charge, then, you know, you'd see much lower prices. Well, for example, you know, a couple of years ago, I was cutting some wood, and foolishly, I wasn't wearing my chaps, and I chopped in. I you know, it only takes a second with a chainsaw, but I had 17 stitches on my leg. Well, I had to pay cash for that. I didn't have any insurance, but heck, you know what? Paying cash for it was actually cheaper than me buying the insurance.
Wow.
That's the way to do it. So these people they run into the emergency room because they, you know, got a head cold or something, and you know, and they expect Uncle Sam to pick up the tab every time, and they do, or they get an ambulance to the a free ambulance ride because they're too poor to pay for it. If everybody had to pay for their way for all these little minor things, that would really start to lower the cost, because it's all done on a cash basis. You don't get the insurance companies involved. Cut out those middlemen, and we have actually, you know, we'll have cheaper access to healthcare instead of it being, what, 1/6 of the economy now? Isn't that ridiculous? It's the same thing with college. The solution to all these kids going to college and getting into debt and in this college bubble is stop going. Just stop going. You know, these kids have to revolt. And, you know, what's the point of getting a degree and find out you're like $100,000 in debt, you're not allowed to declare bankruptcy? Stop participating. Stop going along with it. Stop going to college. You know, if you can't find a job anyway and you got to move back to your parents, why are you going? You know, become your own boss. Become your own entrepreneur. You don't have to go to college and be validated and, you know, to have these degrees that don't mean as much anymore.
Would you consider yourself an entrepreneur?
Yeah, well, I have been for, you know, I was in the newspaper biz, and this is indicative of editorial cartoonists in general, because we generally bridle at authority. We don't like being told what to do. We don't like having bosses. So in 1997, I became my own boss. I started my own business. And I still did work for newspapers, but I was doing them on a contract basis rather than an hourly basis. So, yeah, and I did pretty well for a while until I came up with the bright idea of drawing cartoons, because I was so angry that the banks were bailed out. And I feel like it was my patriotic duty to do something. This, because I could really see, I've been around long enough to see that this isn't right, that the banks are bailed out to the tune of $16 trillion. They got their fingers in the till because they own the till, and they could, like, print up as much money as they want for themselves. What they're really doing is printing up power. So they're printing up the power to buy us all out and prop up their stock market, which they mostly own. And then we have to pay taxes on all that. We have to pay taxes on the debt, the $20 trillion debt. It's a big, giant scam. It's the biggest scam in human history. And nobody's complaining about it. I said, why aren't these other cartoonists drawing anti-Federal Reserve cartoons? And so that's what I started doing. And boy, I found out why, because then you get attacked for being anti-Semitic.
You talked about these trolls violating your intellectual property, your copyright. And I'm wondering, what would you say about the gentleman whose character Pepe has been hijacked by the alt-right and 4chan and used in disparaging ways? I think it's funny personally, but how do you, would you empathize with that, the guy whose character Pepe has been hijacked like this?
Yeah, it's hard for me to drum up a lot of sympathy for something like that, because for one thing, he's on the Matt Fury guy, he's on the left, and he's a big Hillary supporter, and, you know, they did appropriate Pepe, and, you know, he has a case, so come after him, start a lawsuit and see what happens. He'll have the same result that I did. All he's going to do is lose money. But that one is, that almost kind of hit what I would call the public domain, because it became something far greater than what Matt Fury had intended. And when Hillary Clinton began claiming that this Pepe the Frog caricature was a symbol of racism and Nazi embraced by Trump, that's when I started putting Pepe in my cartoons. Why? Because I have followed this stuff for many years, because, you know, this is one thing that a lot of these younger people don't, are surprised to find out a guy who's as old as me. Well, how do you know so much about it? Well, it's because I was dragged into the vortex. I was forced to learn this. I knew nothing about internet culture in 2009, and now I feel like I got a PhD in the subject. But Hillary had no right to say that just because out of 100 instances of this frog being used on sites that, like, such as 8chan and 4chan and many other places, these young people, anonymous posters, were using him as a symbol to express emotion. And there must have been hundreds of variations of this frog. And this frog is almost kind of used as a symbol of protest against the status quo and, you know, the elite who are running the show. You know, it's almost like a protest symbol. And sure, some Nazi, you know, troll put the a swastika on one of the Pepe in one instance, one out of 100. But Hillary zeroes in on this one instance and then enlarges it to say this guy is a symbol of all these Trump supporters. No, I mean, what made her the commissar of hate speech? She's like deciding what's free speech and what's not. You can't use Pepe anymore. And that's when I really started like putting, you know, I have her coughing in one of my cartoons. She's loudly cough, cough, cough. I'm sorry, I got a frog in my throat. And here comes Pepe out and a big fume coming out of her mouth and laughing at her. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I started doing. Or she's in bed with Huma and I got like the drawer open and there's a Pepe the frog, you know, ominously looking at her because she's so paranoid about the alt-right coming after her, all these deplorables, you know. And it just helped she made herself look silly, just like CNN is making themselves look silly now. Barry has a case. If he has a copyright on it, good luck trying to enforce that because you can't. I mean, it's like, you know, I put a copyright on my cartoons and they still routinely deface each and every one of them. But, you know, what you have to do is you have to kind of outshout them, which is what I've done. I mean, my site gets a lot more, we get a lot of traffic now. I mean, it's been pretty darn amazing. And we get, when my cartoons are released, they're retwittered and retweeted and republished everywhere, much farther than the trolls can ever do it. So, you know, that's Matt Fury. I'm sorry, but that's just, he had a comic strip where he killed Pepe, and I did one where you can't kill something that's beyond your control. So I had like this Pepe the Frog walking down the sidewalk in a three-piece suit and a tuxedo, you know, and Pepe is, and Matt Fury is running after him with a pencil saying, wait a minute, I killed you.
That's great.
Pepe saying, who the hell are you?
That's great. So I guess in closing, how do you see this playing out with Antifa becoming has been declared a terrorist organization in at least one state? Do you see more states adapting that?
Well, they are terrorists. What is an attribute of a terrorist? Well, one, they want to instigate physical violence, and they actually want to, you know, maim or even murder people with whom they disagree. Well, who do they disagree with? Anybody who's not in line with their socialist views of things. Anybody who's not in line with their political correctness and their you know, their Frankfurt School of Cultural Marxism is automatically labeled a Nazi. And there's no debate. They refuse to debate anybody. They just want violence. Well, that to me, plus they keep their faces hidden. You look at these things on the videos coming from the college campuses. If somebody wants to go and interview somebody or have a conversation, and let's sort this out through, you know, like Stefan Molyneux wants to, I think it's pronounced Stefan. He wants, you know, reason, logic, and evidence. Let's talk this over using reason, logic. No, they don't want reason, logic, and evidence. They want a bicycle lock upside your head. So that is a form of terrorism. It's an overused word. It's mostly just, they're just criminals. You know, they want to assault people. They want assault. It's assault and battery. So let's arrest them for assault and battery. And if you're walking around in summer with your face hidden, you're up to no good. Let's take these masks off. I mean, why are they afraid? The mask is a sign of fear because they don't want to be known. Like that professor who got arrested for hitting somebody with a bike lock. This professor, for goodness sakes, is teaching ethics. How ridiculous is that? So, yeah, I see that these Antifa consider themselves heroic, but they're really just abject cowards. I mean, if they really want to have some kind of a influence over the debate in this country, well, there's the word, isn't it? Debate. Well, let's see. Let me hear your reasons and facts. I'll listen to you. And then I'll, you know, refute what you're saying, you know, and let's have your thoughts in the common marketplace rather than you trying to beat it into us. That never works. So that's why I drew a cartoon of one of them as being the Nazis. That's what Nazis did. They shut down debate by violence. They sent brown shirts out on the street and beat up anyone who disagreed with the Nazis, didn't they? That sounds familiar. Well, that's exactly what the tactics that they're employing now.
Well, anti-fascists adapting the policies of fascists.
Exactly. Well, you said it much more succinctly than I just did. There you go.
All right. Well, Ben, do you want to talk about any upcoming projects, or when's your next piece of art dropping?
I think I'm going to work on a cartoon this afternoon. I'm probably going to do something on the CNN fiasco. CNN really shot themselves in the foot with this one, so I might do one on that. I always got a sketchbook with, you know, filled with ideas, and it's just me trying to find the time to do it because, you know, I'm making a lot more money on the cartoons now than I was before, and I'm hoping that, you know, someday soon I can do them full time, but I also have to take on commercial work. I still do commercial art for my business, and, you know, I had to have a lot of uncomfortable conversations with some, you know, CEOs and such, saying, well, no, I know you saw this on the internet, but no, I'm not a Nazi, and, you know, I still can do really good work for you. So I've had enough commercial work in, and I'm starting to sell more cartoons and prints, which is very encouraging. And my latest book, I sold a lot more copies than I ever would have imagined. So I'm seeing a future where I'd be able to do more cartoons and draw full time. That's my goal, and I think I can make it happen. So that's what I'm shooting for. And who knows? Maybe I'll do another book next year too. But this one I just did, the presidential election collection, I continue to sell a lot of copies, and it makes my heart glad. So it's like a lot of people out there or giving me support, and I really can't thank them enough, because I couldn't have done this without them. I mean, my Patreon supporters and the people who buy my prints, signed prints and such, it's like they're voting for, hey, we want to have more conservative cartoons and cartoon or conservative voices out there. And if you want to have that, then people need to start supporting the conservatives online, you know, such as yourself and other conservative personalities who are asking for donations. Otherwise, we get like these Time Warner behemoths always dictating what the narrative is, don't we? And the narrative usually is consisting of lies lately, and it has been for a long time, not just lately.
Yeah, you've brought up CNN several times during the course of this chat, and I just find it interesting that this is not the first time they have doxed someone who was a subject of one of their news stories. As you recall, a month or so back, the guy who stopped the incoming ransomware, they outed him without his consent, and he saved the day. If you remember, on the internet, the ransomware that was prevalent at that time, they outed the guy's name without his consent there.
I vaguely remember that. I'm sorry, I don't remember that. I can't sum up the facts in my brain, but what they're doing is what a lot of HR departments are doing throughout the country. And I mentioned early on in the show how free speech has been brought about in the workplace. People are afraid to say anything, you know, for fear of losing their job. Well, that's what CNN is doing. That's what the left does. That's what they tried to do with me, and they succeeded to a great degree. But they want, I mean, I had one of them write me and say, I'm not going to rest until you're broken out on the streets. Well, I was pretty much broken, almost out on the streets for a while. But that's what they're, you know, they you want to use free speech, fine. You're going to be broken out the streets, and your only way of means of talking to anybody would be on a soapbox. And that's the way it used to be, really. I mean, because the mainstream media always held the dominant position. They were the authorities who told you how things were, and they were abject liars, weren't they? And we're finding out they've been lying to us for a long time. Now you've got real journalists out there on the internet who are telling you, who are finding, doing real investigative journalism and telling you the truth. And what they want to do is they want to shut that down. But they want to do that by breaking their banks and going after their means of making a living. So if you're on, you know, YouTube, they want to demonetize YouTube. You know, I'm expecting eventually they're going to go after my Patreon account, and they're going to shut that down because, hey, he's a hater. You know, he doesn't agree with us. And they're going to start doing that. It's a war. This is what they're going after. They're going after your means. means of making a living. That's what they just did to this kid. You know, we're going to out you and you're going to be exposed. You know, I don't even think he's old enough to have a job, mm-hmm. but that doesn't matter. They expose him and then expose him to death threats. And of course, I've got death threats too. They want you to be in fear. They shut you up by fear. So I'm afraid of losing my job. I'm going to shut up. I'm afraid of getting a bike lock upside my head. I'm going to shut up. That's what they're going after. That's what CNN wants. And then they want you to, they want it to go back to the old days because these people have had so much money and influence for so long. They can't stand the fact that they're losing audience to, upstarts, these populist upstarts on the internet. They just can't stand that, and they're in their death throes right now, and they're really swinging after the bell.
Yeah, your friend Alex has really got his sights set on them. He's doing a good job of undermining everything they do. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah, this is the cultural war that we've been talking about. We've been alluding to on and off throughout this this conversation.
I'll tell you what, if anybody does screw with your Patreon, let me know, and we'll go after them on here. Not the way CNN does, but...
That's what's happening now. There's pushback, all over the internet. They're pushing back against CNN, and it's funny. You know, I'm kind of on the side of 4chan now, and I'm on the side of 8chan, and, I'm on the sides of these people that before I couldn't stand, because they're the ones that are actually supporting free speech. And guess what? If it salvages free speech, I'm okay with taking a hit and having people call me Zyklon Ban and altering my cartoons. Is that the price that I have to pay to be able to continue to do what I'm doing? I'm perfectly fine with that. So that's the bottom line there.
Thank you very much, Ben, and best of luck with everything. Loving the art. Loving it, man.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
There isn't a man alive who doesn't like to look at pretty legs. Now you can make your legs prettier, smoother than they've ever been. So smooth, he'll never guess you shave. It's the new, feminine way to shave. Lady Chic Electric Shaving. Look how easy it is. No soapy mess. No razor scraper cuts. Just smooth, smooth, close shaving. You see, unlike a razor or ordinary electric shavers, Lady Chic was designed especially for a lady. It's got two shaving edges, one edge for legs, the other edge shaped just for underarms where the skin is so tender. And the way it gently shaves your underarms makes all other ways of shaving seem like torture. Why, you can use a deodorant immediately and it won't hurt. Lady Chics are so lovely to look at too, and most stores offer a 14-day free home trial. What a gift from $14.95.
And I'm back. I want to thank Ben Garrison for coming on to recount a painful episode from his own personal history. Now, next episode, I'll be speaking with a pagan conservative, and we'll see exactly how that works, because that's a real head-scratcher. Her name is Awielai Horton, and she writes for the Revolutionary Conservative, and they have actually engaged in some real-life activism. They're doing some good things over there, so I'll be speaking to her about her passions to unite the right. That's the name of her pet project, and it's a worthwhile goal. Because God knows the right needs unifying right now. Until then, as they say, that'll do, pig. That'll do. And I will leave you with a nice groovy number by Palace in Thunderland. And the name of this is Heir to the King of Everything. Go get 'em, boys.